another episode of Disruptive Healthcare. I'm Lee Cantor, and I got Stone Payton here with me in the studio. How you doing, Stone?
I am doing well, but I'm still thawing out. It's another cold morning. This weather's crazy.
Yeah, I know. 2 days ago it was 70, and today it's half that.
So this is going to be a fantastic show. We got our buddy Lynn Hood with us from the top colonel of Cracker Jack Marketing. How you doing?
That's right. There's all the little colonels, and then there's the top colonel. I'm doing good. Thank you, Stan.
So now this is going to be a fun episode because we have a lady that's been in the studio before, shared some fantastic information with us, fresh from a chamber meeting this morning, I think. So maybe we'll get a report on that as well. But tell everybody who you brought with you, Lynn.
I brought...
I went totally blank.
I looked at Susie and went, I brought Susie, and then just went blank. Susie?
Done that.
You got Miss Susie. I'm sorry. Susie Brown from the Neuroscience Foundation. Welcome, Susie.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
I brought my notes, everybody.
I didn't bring, I thought I brought my memory, but I think it's still frozen outside on the sidewalk somewhere. Susie, I apologize, because we've known each other for a couple of years and have worked closely together.
I have an email that tells you the difference between forgetfulness and old age and dementia.
Exactly.
I'll send it to you today.
you know that too, don't you? And yes. Susie, why don't you tell us why you know that?
Because I work for the Neuroscience Foundation, and we're all about supporting clinical research, with our main emphasis being on looking at cures for terrible diseases like Alzheimer's, stroke, and Parkinson.
So now, Alzheimer's, stroke, and Parkinson, how are they related? Are they're all neurological?
Yes. The Neuroscience Foundation was started through the wonderful energy and passion of Dr. Marshall Nash, mm-hmm. who is a neurologist in Decatur. He has a research company there, and he also is a director of stroke and neurology research. I'm sorry. I'm not working today either. For Gwinnett Medical Center, both campuses. And so his passion is about Alzheimer's, and so that's how I've gotten to learn so much about the terrible disease. Plus, I have a personal connection.
Now, Alzheimer's, was that the main focus of the foundation? Then it kind of spilled out into these other areas?
Yes, it did, because we realized that there was a real need to get more private physicians involved in clinical research. Mm-hmm. And so we've had the fortune of working with Gwinnett Technical College to create a soup-to-nuts course at 2 semesters that teaches private physicians how to incorporate clinical research into the private practice.
So now you went up to that university and said, hey, I got an idea for you, and then you guys decided to work together on this? Is that how that happened?
And it took 10 minutes. That's all.
Oh, no, a little longer than that. Oh, actually, it's an expansion of something that Dr. Nash and Dr. Robert Powers had done about 6 years ago, and that they created a clinical research coordinator certificate program. And so this was just like a natural expansion.
And so then it's just kind of evolved over time.
Yes, and there's a lot of advantages to private physicians being involved in clinical research. One is there's a lot less politics and red tape when you have a solo practitioner or a small practice.
Right.
The private physician also has a database, a patient database that he can draw from to include in his studies. Dr. Nash no longer sees private patients, so he recruits his patients through
Craigslist,
radio, TV, newspaper. So it takes a lot of time and a lot of money to do that. The third thing is that, you know, Dr. Nash really was interested in kind of replicating himself, which a lot of us wish we could do. So, you know, with the thinking being, you know, more doctors, more patients, more data to speed up the process. It right now takes about 10 years and about $1 billion to bring a pharma drug from inception to market.
Did you just say billion with a B?
Yeah, billion with a B.
Really?
Yep.
Wow. I mean, I knew it was expensive. That just seems like that's a lot of zeros.
It is, because it goes through so many stages that people don't realize. First of all, it goes through the bench where the pharmacist or the doctor is looking at the chemical makeup and doing those kinds of research. And then it goes to animals. And then it goes goes through like 4 phases once it reaches humans. The first phase is relatively healthy individuals, so they can tell if there's any side effects from people who don't have any kind of disease or sickness. Then they spend anywhere from 2 to four phases, working with people with different parameters of the disease that they're trying to make an impact on.
How long does it take? Because I would imagine you can't just, you got to see how the person's going to react over time, right?
Studies are different lengths. Some of them go as long as 6 and 7 years. Personally, I'm involved in a clinical study that's going to be less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, a lot of people have misconceptions about clinical trials being all experimental or, oh, that's Frankenstein's monster. you know, there is an element of risk because you are taking a substance that it's not been approved by the FDA, but has been through a lot of trials and studies before that. But you're adding to science, and hopefully if this drug doesn't work for me, it's going to work for somebody else.
Right.
So, and I can think of a couple more real advantages to doing clinical trials, both for physicians and the general population. One is physicians get paid to do clinical trials.
Yes, they do.
So in a time with shrinking reimbursement where the insurance companies and the government are cutting out cutting down the amount that they get paid to do things, this is a way to participate in science and to get reimbursed for doing it. So that's an advantage to physicians to being involved with this. But there's also an advantage to patients because you're getting a leading edge drug. And maybe it'll, as Susie said, maybe it works for you, maybe it doesn't. I have a family member in, you know, for personal reasons, I won't go into too much detail, but she was telling me about being involved in a clinical trial for multiple sclerosis drug, which she has. And she was telling me that instead of doing her daily shots, well, or in addition to her daily shots, she's doing an every 6 month infusion. And they're testing to see whether this will work for her. Now, this is going to be a long-term trial. She's been doing this, I think, for at least 18 months so far, because you have to track the progression. But she claims to see, and these are blind, so you don't know if you're getting a sugar pill or if you're getting the real thing.
And you might not care if it's working.
You know, actually, you want to talk about the placebo effect?
Yeah, there's also the placebo effect. Even a lot of times those patients who aren't getting the drug show improvement just because they are in a study, they're being cared for, they're being nurtured, and people really respond to, you know, the personal interaction with the nurses and the doctors. And so a lot of times they'll improve and they're getting what's called, you know, what we call the sugar pill. So it's phenomenal. It really is.
Well, she claims to be able to tell a difference, that she's feeling better and that this is helping her. So you get, if you're participating in one of these clinical trials, you get it before anybody else does. And some of these they do aren't even blind. Some of them they're just testing the drug.
So now, what's the challenge when you do a clinical test? Is it to get people to try it or just make them aware that it's even out there?
That's probably one of the biggest, is recruiting people into trials. And there's also, you know, the other side of the regulatory and the FDA. Everything that happens during a trial is monitored. I mean, the one that I'm in, they write down the time they take my blood pressure, they write down the time they draw the blood, that, you know, so everything. And you know, they always call me the next day to see if I've had any reaction, how's everything.
Right.
So, you know, just the process itself.
It's very labor intensive.
It really is. And everything about it is regulated, and you just have to be really careful.
Is the United States have the most regulation out of any country?
I believe so. That's been the feedback that I have from other people who are doing trials in European or Asian companies.
Do some pharmaceutical companies go there first?
Yes.
Yes, because it is easier to set up and there's fewer restrictions. And so, and it costs less. So you can bring the drug to market faster. You can sell it over there faster. And so one of the key things with that is to make sure that you're following the same regulatory process that you would have to do in the U.S. So your clinical trials that are conducted offshore,
so you don't have to
are
start
applicable
again.
Onshore. Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And it's not altogether unheard of to aim a drug at one thing and end up really helping folks out with a completely different condition, right?
That's true.
That would be Viagra.
Is that part of the Viagra story?
Yeah. So it was to help, open up blood vessels and help with the constriction of blood vessels. And what they found out is when you open up blood vessels, it's good for everything.
Well, there you go.
So it was meant as like a heart, like a cardiac drug? yeah. initially. That's funny.
So you two, you mentioned that you knew each other. Mm-hmm. How did you guys get connected? What's the backstory there?
Well, part of my job is being active in supporting the whole life science industry in this area. And so, as you said, I belong to the Metro Atlanta Chamber. I'm part of their bioscience committee. I'm also a member of Georgia Bio, and I participate very heavily in SIMDA. So it's just along the way that I've met Lynn, and she was highly recommended. You know, we've only been in business about a year and a half, and I'm the only one, so I need lots of help. Mm-hmm. And Lynn has, you know, most graciously stepped up and, you know, will help me with some of my website and my messaging and my social media. And I'm so excited about that. Jim Beach's wife's going to volunteer too.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Megan. She's a jewel.
I don't know Mrs. Jim. I know Jim really well.
I met her briefly one time.
She is totally different.
But I should have known. I mean, you can't swing a dead cat if you're in the healthcare arena and not run into Lynn Hood. I mean,
yeah. Thank you. And a lot of people do swing dead cats at me, frankly. That's
a lot
constant
of medical testing.
For me.
Probably there.
No, and so as we met each other, and Susie makes a real point of getting involved in the community and getting out there to spread the message of what the Neuroscience Foundation is doing. So talking about what they do, you come back, and so it's very important to have these physicians. So part of what she's doing is to help encourage the trials and support them in the neuroscience area. But the other part of what the Neuroscience Foundation is doing is trying to get doctors of any kind mm-hmm. to participate more in clinical trials. Uh-huh. This is good for the state. Now, if you remember, we've talked before, back on November 1st, there was a clinical trials in Georgia conference.
Right.
And we had, I think Susie and I both worked on that together.
Yes, we did.
I think we had about 200 people there, and they learned more about how to do clinical trials and remain in compliance, because there's a lot of regulations around this, the benefits. So some of it was to recruit people in. Some of it was to help train the people who are already doing it and bring new information out there that was going on. So it's really important in this program that Dr. Nash originated with Gwinnett Tech is part of trying to get more people involved and trained and bringing these trials to Georgia. So if we have a lot of resources here, we get more trials in. The drug companies come in here, they go, oh my gosh, look, it's only 32 in Atlanta today. It's -5 up in Flint, Michigan. I want to be in Atlanta. So they come in to here and they do more trials. They bring more people in. We get more Georgians earlier access to drugs, and it's just one of those win-win-win-win-win-win-win kinds of things.
And the other thing that attracts people to the Atlanta area is the rich diversity that Atlanta has with its, you know, its Asian population and its Black population and, you know, a few others along the way that I'm not mentioning. So that's also a draw because companies want to know how it affects different peoples of different nationalities.
And so how's it all funded? When I see the word foundation, first thing I think of is money. How does this get funded?
Well, for the first year and a half, Dr. Nash very generously funded the foundation at 100%. I'm the only employee, and so, you know, I'm the main expense. But over the last year and a half, we've developed a board. We've developed a committee structure, and so now we are putting a marketing plan in place, a fundraising committee in place. I have a treasurer that's overseeing, you know, the contributions and the monies that we bring in through special events, which, by the way, our golf tournament's going to be on September the 15th. So, October the 15th. So be there or be square. So it's supported in a lot. And then we also have some foundation funding. So it's a multitude of ways like most not-for-profits are.
Now, what's a reason a doctor says, I don't want to participate in clinical trials? Like you explained that there's some benefits, financial benefits for them to participate. What are some of the reasons they say that they don't want to?
Well, some doctors just personally aren't interested in doing research. Mm-hmm. I would assume others, you know, have a very busy practice and, you know, maybe don't think they have time to do it. But we are finding, as Lynn said, with managed care and the scare of what the reimbursement rates are going to do in 2014, even those doctors who are not interested in doing clinical research think it's a great idea because they've heard their colleagues talk about
the benefits of doing it.
Well, being nervous about reimbursement rates and what's going to happen, and you know, will they be able to afford to stay in a private practice, especially those that are young and upcoming and just getting started.
What percentage of doctors participate in clinical trials?
Oh, I have no idea on that. What a great question. That's something that we could research and get back to you.
We'll put the poll out there on the Disruptive Healthcare site.
Can tell you that I do have a semi-answer to this. We have 25,000 people in Georgia participating in clinical research. That's the number that I saw come through.
There are several private research companies. So these are physicians who only participate in research as Dr. Nash does. Now, Dr. Nash is a single practitioner. He has what they call sub-investigators, which are other physicians that work with him when they refer their patients into trial. Because one misconception is when a doctor refers a patient into a trial, that's still the first doctor's patient. It doesn't become Dr. Nash's patient. So that's one of the misconceptions, and one of the reasons I've heard about folks being a little concerned.
Like hesitant
from
doing it.
Yeah, because you don't want to take your patient base and keep sending them over to somebody else that's going to take them from you. I mean, they're a little proprietary about this. They need to keep those people coming in.
Sure.
And which is entirely not true. The person doing the clinical research only sees them for the research purpose. They're not trying to snag a patient.
So what's the prudent path if I or a family member, for instance, maybe has Alzheimer's and we're interested in taking advantage of clinical trials? Is there some clearinghouse? What's the best way to go about finding the right clinical trial, all that kind of thing?
The only clearinghouse that I'm aware of is a website called clinicaltrials.gov. And I'll just tell you, it's very difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
That is one of the goals of the bioscience arm of the chamber. They would like to create a list of all the doctors doing clinical research in Georgia. So hopefully that is a goal that we can do, in the near future, not in the.
But I think that would mean an awful lot. In my personal case, to my knowledge at this moment, we're not in that situation with Alzheimer's. We're probably in that situation with some sort of challenge, and I would, or will be at some point, I would like to have a credible place to go to look for those opportunities.
What I would do in that case, and Susie's right, there is a government-funded clearinghouse that's supposed to have everything in it, but of course it doesn't. So what I would do in that case would be to simply Google Alzheimer Clinical Trials, Georgia, and you will get a lot of results.
Okay.
Or we have a group, for example, in oncology called CORE, which is, do you remember what that stands for?
I bet the O is oncology.
You know, that's right. Research.
Research. But they have a, Nancy Paris is a phenomenal lady. You should get her on one of your programs.
We can do that.
But she was able to secure some of the tobacco money. And so she was able to develop a website that is very patient friendly that lists all the clinical trials for cancer in Georgia. And she's another person who would like to take that expertise that they learned through their growing process and expand that website to include all clinical trials in Georgia. But Lynn is right. Or, for neurology, they can certainly go to www.neurostudies.net. That's Dr. Nash's website. And if they are not doing that type of clinical trial there, they certainly can help you to find one that is someone who is. Or they can call me or Google or just get on my website. And
which would be?
www. NSFoundation.net. And I must say, I've had a couple of people call me and say, I'm looking for, the latest one, I was looking for a Parkinson trial in San Antonio.
Wow, that's very specific. That sounds like a Haro query.
Well, it was kind of like a friend of a friend, foundation. And so I was happy to be able to help locate a Parkinson's clinical trial in San Antonio for this lady.
And one of the things when you Google, what you're going to get is not just, you may get some ads, some physician sponsored where they're trying to, or clinical trial sponsored ads where they're trying to recruit to a specific trial, uh-huh. where that's probably going to take you is to a nonprofit organization, such as the Parkinson's organization mm-hmm. or Alzheimer's. And so, and they do a good job of aggregating all the clinical trials. That's one of the things they do, which is why I suggest searching by specific disease, and then you give them the clinical trials, and then your state, because it may come up. But if you can, a lot of those associations will have links to get you to clinical trials.
I do know that the Alzheimer's Association does have a clinical trials. It's clinical trials. It's part of their overall Alzheimer's Foundation. And so you can go in there and find clinical trials for Alzheimer's, dementia, or any kind of memory loss on their website.
Now, you came here, you said you're the first executive director
yes.
for the foundation?
Yes.
So what? How did you get here? How did you find out about it?
Well, I think this is a song. I left a good job in the city. I grew up in the South. I grew up in Mississippi and spent my former lifetime. I spent 20 years working for different United Ways. And I did end up in New York City because of my career there. 2.5 years ago, my mother was diagnosed with dementia. And realizing what a toll that was going to take not only my mother but also my sister, whom my mother lives with down in Fayetteville, I made the decision to come and support the family. Mm-hmm. Since then, or really just since Christmas, my mother's diagnosis has been changed to Alzheimer's. And even though I knew it was coming, it kind of hit me like a brick.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, you know, I know that there's not any drug even close to being approved by the FDA. But then thankful too, because I made the decision to come here. My mother was stable for two and a half years. Spent a lot of wonderful time with her. She's a phenomenal lady. And, you know, also to support my sister, who has supported me throughout her lifetime. So it was amazing. That just shows you how everything works together. I actually just put all my stuff in storage and came down here with a temporary position and was offered the job at the foundation 3 weeks later.
Oh, so you didn't know about the foundation.
Man.
Talk about serendipity, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's impressive. So we all know what a fantastic ambassador Lynn Hood is for the Metro Atlanta Chamber, and I think we've come to learn she's a marvelous ambassador for Business Radio X as well. But I'd like you to speak to your experience at the Chamber. What attracted you to get so involved? What's
right,
the experience
you're involved
been like?
In SEMDA and yeah. Georgia Bio. You're really plugged yourself into this whole life science community here.
I'm a member of three chambers and also the Decatur Rotary.
Oh, wow.
But one of the things that I learned early in my career and one of the things I try to pass along to young professionals is that you need to learn how to give before you can get. Learned how to go in and to develop relationships, to build that trust, to give of yourself and support and help others. And then when you have a need, people will return that. And my experience at the chamber has just been phenomenal. They do have a very strong life science arm, which looks at clinical trials, which also looks at medical devices. And then it also has an economic development arm.
Well, and then in health IT, too.
Right.
David Hartnett does a tremendous job leading that.
Phenomenal, phenomenal. And so it gave me the opportunity to meet a lot of people who were in the field that I was interested in. And so that was a great. But because of the relationships that I've been able to build through the chamber, the foundation recently went through a strategic planning process, and I didn't have any money to pay anybody. And so I called the chamber and I said, hey, do you know anybody that would do this for free? And they did. And I called her, Lynn Martin, phenomenal lady, has spent numerous hours with me and with the board of directors leading us through a strategic planning process. So it's been great. It's been great. And also last night I went to the chamber after hours. One of the young professionals I had the opportunity to work with in New York City recently completed her bachelor's and master's health down in South Florida, moved to this area, looking for a job. So I just took her and introduced her, and so she got a couple of great leads. So it's easy when people know that you will give and you're not just a taker.
Now, how has it been when you compare it to what's happening in New York City as to what's happening here?
Well, it's certainly a lot easier to get involved in the community here. Mm-hmm. And you can see the result of your efforts a lot quicker here. So, you know, I guess that would be the main things. And the whole life science industry is just really, really booming in the Atlanta area. And as Lynn said, Health IT, it's my understanding that there is one person for every 10 jobs that are available. In fact, my son's retiring from the Army in 3 years, and so a little angel on his shoulder has been saying, Health IT, Health IT.
Yep.
Because he plans to relocate here when he retires from the Army in 3 years, so I'm excited about that.
So you talked about – go ahead, I'm sorry.
And let me mention part of the overall bioscience and life sciences area is SEMDA, Southeastern Medical Device yes. Association. Hey, listen, I only have 2 more weeks to push this thing. So it's going to be on February the 19th and the 20th. Georgia Tech, go to SEMDA, SEMDA.net, and you can register, very reasonably priced, for 2 days. I mean, we've talked about this before. Can't eat out for the amount that we're charging for this for 2 days. Plus, we just announced 20 presenting companies. Now, that's an increase over the number we've ever had before.
Oh, yeah.
We had so many good ones, and they range from very early stage to some that are seeking a Series B funding, which is pretty advanced along the way. And we include this year health IT companies, MDDS, which is Medical Data Development Systems. Yes. So we're including those as well as the medical devices, because now MDDS systems are being regulated by the FDA, which, by the way, we will have the head of the FDA coming and speaking to us.
Yay.
Good stuff. Now, so anything happening now? Anything new happening with your foundation?
Well, the foundation was actually gifted 4 internet radio stations. One of them focuses on oncology. The other 3 focus on clinical research. Uh-huh. So after we have our board meeting, I'm coming back to talk to you about how to get those up and running.
Good stuff.
Yes.
Because this is a tremendous resource.
It is. And I've done a lot of exploration talking to different business leaders in the community. And there appears to be a real need to provide some lessons learned.
And a platform to help them get the word out. Because yes. That seems to be a big challenge across the board.
And, also we talked about the regulatory. Mm-hmm. It's also a lot of changes there. And so to keep people abreast and informed on what the changes are.
So now if somebody wants to learn more, website again of the foundation?
www.nsfoundation.net 404-824-2040.
And then, Lynn, your coordinates for SEMDA, you want to if you get one of the last couple slots left to attend?
Oh, we will. We are filling up. SEMDA, SEMDA, which stands for the Southeastern Medical Device Association, SEMDA.net, because the .nets are the coolest places to go
these days.
Where the
cool guys hang out.
Well, because otherwise they wanted $50,000 to buy those 5 little initials with a .com. So what about we happen to be nonprofit.
What about the Metro Chamber?
MetroAtlantaChamber.com. And because I know what you're going to ask next, crackerjack-marketing.com. And you can see some of the things that I've done for people. Although, if you really want to see what I've done, go over and take a look at Susie's website, because I built that out for her.
You've been helping that area, too.
Yes.
I have. They had someone build out a website, and they were supposed to be able to easily update it. And there was no way. There was no way to put in new materials or change things. It was just locked down tight. And so I gave them something very easy to work with and make changes.
And that is good stuff. Well, thank you all for participating. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Disruptive Healthcare.